So it's going. Okay, so it seems that we're live again. All right, let's see if I can record it this time. Okay, there we are. Okay, well, welcome everyone. This is thank you for coming to the second episode of the Divorce Friday podcast. The Divorce Friday podcast aims to answer financial questions about divorce, and we aim to come with a new episode every 2 weeks. So I am Chris Chen. I am with Insight Financial Strategies, a registered investment advisor in Newton, Massachusetts.
And hi, everybody. I'm Diane Pappas. I'm a certified divorce financial analyst, and I have a firm, Solutions for Divorce, in Gloucester, Massachusetts. How you doing today, Chris?
Doing great. Doing great. It's a great day, but it's a great day. Aha.
That's right. It's Divorce Friday.
Friday.
So everyone who, if you're new to Divorce Friday, yeah, you will find us here every other Friday on this Facebook page, Divorce Finance, which we are trying to change to Divorce Friday, but you can still plug in Divorce Friday and find us. Please like us and follow us. You can also find us on Twitter. Follow us there too.
Cool. And on Twitter, we're actually Divorce Friday. So please make sure to ask all of your questions in the Facebook page or any other way that you can find, and we will get to them eventually. You can also follow us on Twitter at Divorce Friday, and soon you will find us on YouTube and all the regular podcast channels.
Yep, and finally, we can be contacted through our own websites. Mine is solutionsfordivorce.com, all spelled out. And Chris's, what is yours?
Mine is Insight Financial Strategist with an S at the end, .com.
Yep. And my email is Diane, D-I-A-N-E, at solutionsfordivorce.com. And Chris, I think yours is somewhat the same.
It's somewhat the same. It's chris.chen at insightfinancialstrategist.com.
Great. So we want to announce our next episode, which will be Friday, September 25th, same time at 11 a.m. on this Facebook Live station. And we will be talking about income, how to understand the different sources of income in divorce. So we will, that's our next topic, next on Friday, September 25th. So last time, Chris, we talked about whether or not you needed a financial expert in divorce. We went into what a CDFA was, what a CFP, a CPA, and how using a CDFA, which is what Chris and I are, how using a CDFA can really help you and benefit you through the divorce process by giving you that valuable information you need. So if you missed that episode, you can find it on the Facebook page. So you can go back and look through it and be very entertained.
And be very entertained. And sometimes in the very near future, we'll put them all together on a single page where we can all find it much more easily. But yep. Today, we're talking about the marital home.
Yes, we are. So what to do with the marital home and divorce? I know that whenever my clients come to me, some of the first questions they have is, what are we going to do with the house? Or sometimes people don't, they're too afraid to ask what they're going to, what they can do with the house. So they kind of ignore it. And that's probably one of the worst things to do is to ignore it. So I always refer back to my own divorce. And I know that when we started talking about it, my fear was, where am I going to live? And that's always the biggest thing. Are we going to have to sell this house? You know, you've been there probably for a pretty long time. Maybe your children are there too, if you have children. And so the last thing you want to think about is leaving that house. And so it's a very scary thing. So if you're going through a divorce, you're also thinking about, can I stay here? Do I have to leave? Am I going to be living in a cardboard box? I've had many people say things like that to me, that they're afraid they're going to be living in a cardboard box because they can't see beyond what their situation is right now.
Yeah. A lot of the time, I think we call that the bag lady syndrome.
Yep. Well, cardboard box, bag lady.
Bag lady, right? And yep. Of course, no one wants to be a bag lady. No woman wants to be a bag lady. In fact, no man wants to be a bag lady.
No, definitely not. So, you know, when you can't see beyond your current situation, how are you going to get the information you need to see beyond what your reality is today? And that's where a CDFA can come in, because we can help you see what your options are. And there are options for what to do with the marital home. You might not like all the options, but I think it's really definitely worth exploring what those options are. And the reason why the marital home becomes such a emotionally challenged topic in divorce is because it's one of your biggest assets. Most people have their home, the equity in that home, and then they have retirement. And those are usually the two biggest assets. So of course, you're going to have emotions about those, because tied with when you have assets and you have things that involve money, you have emotions that are attached to that.
Right. I think one of the biggest issues there is that because divorce is a highly emotional time, is that people tend to make bad decisions about the various assets, because when we're emotional about stuff, we make bad decisions.
Yes, definitely. So, and even though we like to acknowledge emotions, we also sometimes need to put them aside, right, Chris?
That's what we help people do, right? Is that I think we can't blame people for having emotions. It's totally normal.
No.
But because it's not your divorce and it's not my divorce, then we can afford to take a step back and shepherd people through it.
Right. And also, you know, when I was saying that a lot of people can't look beyond their current situation because they have no idea how the divorce process works. You know, they've just heard horror stories from their friends or relatives or whatever. And so that fear of the unknown is always a really scary thing that also causes delay in the divorce process. Because many times I've been on cases where they're asking someone to make a decision and that person just can't make a decision because they're fearful of what the outcomes are. They're fearful because they don't understand. So that fear of the unknown is what we try to take away.
Yeah, so it's taking away the fear of the unknown, trying to rationalize the possibilities that are ahead. And so our goal this morning is to try to remove that fear and to help define those possibilities so you can make the right decisions going ahead. So let's start with what options are in real life. So Diane, what options do people have with a marital home?
Well, there's a handful of options. Like I said, most people come in with only one option in their head, and that is to stay in the house. But we have four options that we can talk about today. One is obviously to sell the house now and split the proceeds. Another one, which I like, is to jointly own the home for a period of time and sell at a future date. You know, again, because there's so many unknowns going on, let's just see how everything pans out for a while. Let's just keep the status quo and sell at a future date. Another option, which works, but it's a little trickier, is when one spouse buys out the other. We'll explain what that is. So you always hear, well, buy me out of the house. So we'll explain what that means. And then a last one is maybe you have assets that you can trade that are equal in value to each other. So the value is equal in the marital equity and some other asset. It'd be nice if there were another home, so that you can trade apples with apples.
Sure. And so that's really tricky because typically there is not another home, right? And typically people who are trading the equity in the home for something else, these are different kind of assets and the value is not necessarily equivalent, right? So, but we'll get to that.
Right.
So shall we address the first step there, which is to sell the home now and split the proceeds?
Right. So I like to share my own personal stories because I think that really helps people say, oh, you know, easy for you to say. Well, it actually is easy for me to say because I went through it. So I know when I was going through my own divorce, this is what my husband wanted to do. He wanted to sell the house. I was very upset, obviously, but I was like, okay, let me see what's out there. So I tried to find rentals in my town. But when I kept looking with my realtor to even rent, I was just looking to rent, not even buy. I couldn't find a house that had a lower rent payment than my our current mortgage. And I find that this happens a lot, right, Chris?
It's actually
cheaper, or you know, more affordable to stay in the house, because your mortgage payment is most likely going to be lower than rents in the area.
Right. And I think that really depends on the area that you live in. I mean, there are definitely areas of the country where rent is going to be cheaper than a mortgage, right? But it's something that you need to consider.
Right. And like in my community where I lived, it was a bedroom community. So we really didn't have a lot of rentals.
Right.
We had, in that period of time, we had people were leaving to go take jobs elsewhere and they couldn't sell their home. So they were renting their homes and they were charging rent to cover everything, to cover their mortgage payments, which were huge.
Right.
So at that particular time when I was looking, I could not find a home that would have been affordable.
Right.
So we ended up owning the home jointly for 3 years.
Right. So you mentioned a second ago, or 2 seconds ago, that when you were looking for a rental, you were looking in the same community. And I think that's important because a lot of people are in the same kind of predicament that you are in, right? So why were you looking in the same community?
Well, because it's the kids. So I did have young children at the time in high school. One was, I think, a freshman in high school. And the other one was in eighth grade. And, you know, we always want to try to keep the status quo for our children. And so you kind of need to stay in the same community. You don't have to. There are some cases where people just can't. And kids are very resilient. But in this case, and in most cases, people can stay in the same community and, you know, try to find downsize or something. And I have worked on many cases where they have been able to do that.
Yeah.
But sometimes we have to sell the home. There are no other options.
Right.
So Chris, what are some of the advantages of selling the home?
Yeah, so one of the advantages is obviously, when you sell the home, you're going to have a bunch of cash, the equity in the home that is going to come back to you. And obviously, you're going to have to share that with your spouse, right? But in general, for most people, the capital gains in the home is not going to be taxable. And that is because we have, on a per couple basis, you have a $500,000 exemptions on capital gains. And so it's not going to be taxable, and that's pretty cool. The other advantage of that is that when you sell the home, you're going to be able to share the cost of the sale and the tax liability, if there is a tax liability, with your spouse. Whereas if you're going to, say, buy the home, right, and we'll address that later, if you're going to buy out your spouse, then you might have to shoulder the cost of the sale and tax liability on your own later,
right?
And lastly, I think that selling the home really has an important advantage in terms that it provides a clean break, right? It forces people to essentially leave behind the bad old marriage and then move on to a hopefully better post-divorce life.
Right. So Chris, you're talking about capital gains, and a lot of people don't really know capital gains because they haven't sold a house in a while. And they think that maybe it's the old capital gains rule.
Yeah.
But capital gains, I just want to explain what that is. It's the, when you sell your house with a sale price of, $500,000, and you compare that to what your cost basis in the house, what you paid for it in the very beginning. Maybe you paid $250,000, then you added $50,000 of major repairs throughout the years. So now your house is $300,000 in cost basis. That's what it cost you. You sold it for $5,000. You now have $200,000 in gain.
Right.
So since that $200,000 falls below the $500,000 exclusion, you will not pay any capital gains tax.
Right. And I think that's very important. I'm sorry that I use the word capital gains, and I'm sorry that you use the word cost basis, because it's a sort of jargon kind of things. But by and large, you take the proceeds from the sale, less your cost, and that's your gain that is excluded from taxes if you for in a divorce case, if you sell it right away, up to $500,000.
Right.
So what about some of the downsides of selling the home at the time of divorce?
Well, you know, for when you sell the house, obviously you need another place to live. So there are times when there is enough equity in the home that, you know, the sale, the proceeds from the sale are enough to put down another down payment on another house. That's sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It depends on your income and, you know, what if you need child support or alimony, if you're going to qualify for a new mortgage. So there's a lot of things that you do have to consider with that. You know, where are you going to live? Because now you will either have to rent or buy another place. Sometimes, Chris, the proceeds from the sale of that home, like I just said, are not enough to put down on another piece of property. So maybe you will have to rent for a while. The proceeds that may have to be used to pay off something else, like maybe some marital debt that needs to be paid off. If you're having trouble making your ends meet on a monthly basis because of that debt, selling the marital home is a great way to raise that cash to pay off that debt. In the long run, that's a better option, is to pay that debt off. But then that means you may not be able to buy a house. Also, like I mentioned, you may not be able to qualify for a new mortgage, especially if you are depending on child support or alimony as part of your income. You may not qualify. So that's something, Chris, right, that we have to really address at the very beginning of the divorce process.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the time, people who have a mortgage on their home have qualified for the mortgage based on their joint income, right? And so once they divorce, then they have to qualify for a mortgage based on their own income, and that may or may not work out. And so that's something to keep in mind.
Right.
But shall we move on to the second possibility, which is to keep the home jointly and to keep owning it for at least a while?
Right. Yeah. So like I said, in my own divorce, we ended up keeping the house. It was still a battle to get my husband at the time to agree, but we finally did. And we owned it for 3 years. So we co-owned it. I did not buy him out or anything because at that point I did not want to do that. So we co-owned, and we also made the agreement that we would equally pay for the principal, the interest, the taxes, and the insurance on the home. And I would pay for all the other expenses, and I would use the income from child support and alimony to do that. Right. So again, the biggest advantage to staying in the home and owning it jointly is that you retain the status quo. So the one spouse and the children get to live in a, you know, they get to stay in the place where they're currently living.
Right. So you both got you. I'm sorry. You and your daughters got to stay in the home for another 3 years, which gave you the time to figure out what to do next. And then you also figured out. You also agreed with your ex to share the cost of the mortgage.
Right.
I think that's important. Is that if someone stays there, there has to be a way to figure out how the expenses are going to get paid.
Right. So like our divorce was fairly amicable. We were not in litigation. So, you know, a lot of how your outcome is going to, what your outcome is going to be really depends on the process you're in. Right. So we were in an amicable process, fairly amicable. And, you know, he did finally acquiesce and agreed to help pay, because I would not have been able to stay in there if I had to pay the whole thing.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So so basically, I think the main advantage of that is that it allowed your kids to stay in the school system, right? And it allowed you to take time to figure out what to do next.
Right. And, you know, one other thing I want to say is that a lot of women think that they want to stay in that house forever. And, you know, I love my house. I'd lived there for 18 years or whatever at that point, you know, did all the landscaping, everything around it. But let me tell you that at the end of those 3 years, I was ready to move on. I just did not want to be in that house anymore for whatever reason. You know, it didn't feel like my house. It just, you know, call it bad memories, whatever. But I did need that time. And that's why I really think owning jointly is a really good idea, because it does give you that time to adjust to the new normal that you're going to be living and to say, hey, you know what? I don't really need to stay in this house. This is not the be all and end all.
Right. So what are some of the disadvantages of owning it together?
Well, as you know, when we were talking about selling the home, you get a clean break. When you are owning it together like this, you have a continued tie with that spouse. Now, again, if you're somewhat amicable, that can be okay. But I have had situations where it's just not amicable. You know, maybe the spouse, the out spouse, as we call them, the person that doesn't live in the house, still feels he has a right to come into the house. So that does create problems. So you have to set boundaries, you know, and you also sometimes, because you're still in that house, you cannot move on. Or the person that's not in the house sometimes cannot move on because their name is still on that mortgage that you're paying for, and it may disqualify them from buying another property. So there, you know, we have to look at that too.
So the person who's moving out may have to go and rent someplace for a while.
Right. You know, and until that person is able to find where they really want to be. You know, typically a lot of people will say, let's own the home until our youngest graduates high school. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that for most people, that's usually for, you know, 3 to 4 years. There are cases where the kid's much younger. But typically, what I have found is that this typically happens when you only have about 3 or 4 more years to go. So it's doable. And, you know, if you really care to think about the children and to let go of everything else that's happened because of the divorce and just try to think of the right thing for the family, that's a good idea, is to, you know, stay, to own it, and then figure out what you're going to do after that.
Right. And so one of the critical aspects, I think, of continuing to own it together is to agree about when to sell it. And so normally you would want to have an agreement up front at the time that you divorce. You would want to agree that, I think you mentioned earlier, when the youngest graduates from high school, or whatever the date is, whatever date that you agree to.
Right. Yep. So, you know, that is really good too, because at that point, you'll know again. Sometimes people say they will have the option to buy out at that time. So maybe you do want to continue to stay in that home, and now you have an option to buy out. Maybe you're in a better position financially. Your income has now gone up. You're, you know, a little more consistent, and maybe you will qualify for a buyout now. Maybe in some circumstances, the out spouse, the person that wasn't living there, now they have an opportunity to maybe buy out and get into the, you know, maybe buy that house. So again, there are options. And even within this one option, there are several options.
Sure, sure.
But I think the most important thing, Chris, is that we talk about that. When you work with a CDFA, we talk about all these different options. And so that when we're going through this from the very beginning, it's in your head and you're starting to think, okay, what can I, you know, what do I want to do? Now that you're being empowered with this information that you actually do have other options, it helps you move forward with the negotiations.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think you mentioned something where after you own it jointly for a while, one of the two ex-spouses might want to decide to buy the other one out. Obviously, that can happen later, or it can happen earlier, right at the time of the divorce. So what is a buyout, actually? How did that work out for you?
Right. So, well, a buyout is when... So what you're doing basically is you're buying out your ex-spouse's ownership in the property.
Mm-hmm.
So the ownership, the part of the ownership is the marital equity. And the marital equity is the difference of the fair market value of the property minus the mortgage. That's the equity, that chunk between there. So there's a little, you know, there's some complications in there. You have to establish the fair market value. You have to agree on what that fair market value is. Typically, we get an appraisal done, maybe two appraisals, and we take the average. You can also do market analysis. So there are different ways to establish that fair market value, but that value has to be established, because that's the only way that you can figure out what the marital equity is, because it's value, fair market value, or sale price, but it's going to be the fair market value if you're doing a buyout. This is not really a sale, but pursuant to a divorce, it qualifies.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, the difference be, so let's say the difference is 200,000 between the fair market value and your mortgage. So 200,000 is the marital equity. So each spouse is, you know, typically will have 50% equity in that property. So if you're going to buy out your spouse's equity, that means you have to come up with $100,000 to buy them out of that property. So,
right. So that can be a challenge also, right? Is that buying out doesn't always work, right? Because the person who's buying out has to be able to afford it, right? You have to be able to find essentially that 50% of equity that belongs to your spouse, right? And you have to find a way to finance that, right? And it has to be done then out of other assets or potentially refinancing.
Right. And most people want to try to refinance because you have to refinance anyway. If you're going to buy out your spouse, you have to refinance the mortgage to remove the other spouse's name from that mortgage. That's the only way to get that person's name off. And that person will want their name off because, like we said earlier, you can't move forward with another mortgage because that you may not have enough money to qualify for both mortgages. So the only way to remove your ex-spouse's name is for you to refinance on your own. And again, sometimes this gets left to the very end and people don't even go through the qualification process. So here they are, they're ordered 30 days after the divorce to refinance the house and they find out they can't do it.
Right.
And that's because they didn't address it from the very beginning.
Right. And I think that's a very common problem actually, is that people tend to be a little bit over-optimistic about their ability to refinance. And there they go, they get to the time of divorce and then they try to refinance and then they're not able to.
Yep.
All right, so it's something that has to be planned up front.
Yeah, so I mean, and what we do is when we work with a client, they want to do a buyout, we start that process very early, exploring it. You know, we want to get the appraisal done and we want to have a pre-qualification to make sure that spouse qualifies. And Chris, also one of the other problems, which I know we're going to talk about in one of our next video podcasts, is the sources of income in the next, but also child support and alimony. Because there are some people who their only source of income is child support and alimony. And the banks and the mortgage companies, the lenders, have very specific rules on when they can and cannot use alimony and child support for income to qualify. So sometimes I've seen a buyout where they will do the buyout a year after the divorce. Now, why would they do that? The reason why is because the bank needs a 12-month history of that person receiving either the child support or the alimony or both. Right. They want to make sure that they're going to be getting, they have a history of receiving that income and that it's likely to continue for at least the next 3 years.
Yeah. So unfortunately, when you're divorcing, it's not just the two of you that are that are involved, but is also other third parties like mortgage lenders. And so that is worth it to keep this in mind.
Right.
So so what are some of the other pitfalls of buying out?
Well, you know, again, I can't stress enough that the question comes down to, can you really afford it? Can the spouse who's going to stay in, the in-spouse, can they really afford to stay in that house, to own it and take care of it and maintain it? And I have found that not everyone can. I have many cases, a handful where the wife and the mom stayed in the house with the kids and then had to sell it a couple of years later because just couldn't afford it anymore. So it's really important, I think, if there's anything that we can talk about in this 30 minutes, which is almost up already, I can't believe it. No time flies when we're having so much fun, but yes. Is that you really have to look at can you afford it?
Right.
You know, we have to take a really close look to see, is this something that you really are able to do?
Right. And I think there is two aspects to this. Right. And we'll cover that in greater detail in a future episode of this. But one of the aspects we've already addressed is, can you actually qualify for the mortgage? Right. And the second is, can you actually afford it, period, even if you have a mortgage? Mortgage lenders will allow you to use a lot of your income for paying the mortgage. But the problem after that is that you need to live on the remainder. And that is not always something that is possible if your mortgage is too high. So there's two aspects to it. Can you refinance, and can you live on the remainder of your income after that?
Right. And so that's where we do a cash flow analysis. Like, I work very closely with my clients to identify every little expense that they're going to have in that house, you know, from the kids to their Netflix subscription to their yoga. A lot of times people forget about all these little, you know, things because they're a subscription that just gets charged to their credit card every month. They go to Starbucks and they, you know, spend $16 for their lattes or whatever the price is now. Those things add up. And
it's high, but it's not 16 yet.
It's not 16. Well, I heard some crazy prices out there.
Right.
But you know, you just really need to understand what your expenses are. And we're actually gonna, because this is such an important topic, we're gonna spend a whole podcast on it about living expenses. But one thing to remember that I like to always say is, if you were living paycheck to paycheck prior to the divorce and you were having it, you know, you have a lot of credit card debt, and you were struggling to make ends meet, then probably buying out that house is probably not going to work for you.
Right. And that's something that, again, that we would look at in detail. Right? And you would want to also keep in mind that not all of the income that you get may help you qualify for the mortgage. And also that that some of the income that you'll be getting post-divorce, like child support or alimony, is not necessarily going to keep up with inflation. And so your overall cost of living is going to keep increasing, but your after inflation income, your real income is actually going to be decreasing a little bit. And so you have to keep that in mind.
Right. Yeah. Well, mortgage companies qualify you on your gross income. So, you know, like you said, Chris, earlier, you might qualify for the mortgage, but are you really going to be able to live? Because that they're qualifying you on your gross income.
Right.
Because that's the way the ratios work. But sure. Like you said, is that net income going to be enough to sustain everything? You know, right. A lot of people, they want to, the roof needs replacing, the furnace, water heater, all these little things add up. And, you know, when that person moves out of the house, that's when everything starts to break.
And I think that's something that's worth keeping in mind, is a lot of the time when people do a budget for post-divorce, they don't take house maintenance costs into consideration. And the reality is that there will be maintenance costs. Even if in the past year you haven't had much of it, you will have it in the future. So you mentioned the roof, the boiler can go, or some wood can rot. There's all kinds of things that can go wrong.
Right. You know, and also other costs that maybe your spouse did, you know, maybe they mowed the lawn or they did the shoveling and all that, and now you have to pay someone to do it. So like all those things are things that we have to really take into account to see if this is something that you can do. Because my saying is, and you know, a house can't pay the bills.
It can.
So, nope. So why do you, what? No, it can't.
Oh.
No, it cannot pay the bills.
Yeah.
You might have equity in the home. And yes, if you stay there for a while, you know, you build up that equity. That's an asset. But you don't want to be real estate rich and cash poor.
Yeah, I think that's one of the key aspects of owning real estate, is that owning real estate doesn't pay the bill. In fact, it costs you money to own it. And that's different from some other assets that do not cost money. But that's something that we maybe need to keep for another episode, because we've run through the half hour here.
Yeah, right? We have. I don't know how that happens each time.
Yeah. So we need to remind everyone that circumstances are different for everyone, and that a podcast like this one cannot replace a consultation with a professional. So if you are seriously considering divorce, get a consultation, right? And please join us for our next episode. When is that again, Diane?
It is Friday, September 25th at 11 o'clock, TGIDF.
TGIDF. And what will we cover?
We are going to talk about understanding the different sources of income in divorce. So how the different sources of income are used. If you're self-employed, if you're retired, we're going to look at all that income and see how we look at it in a divorce.
Excellent. So this has been the second episode of our live Divorce Friday podcast, the podcast that answers financial questions about divorce. Thank you all for coming. We hope to see you again next time on September 25th with Divorce Friday Conversations with Diane Pappas and Chris Chen.
Great. Yep. Sounds good. Nice seeing you this morning, Chris. Have a great day.
See you later, Diane.
Okay. Bye, everybody. Bye.